All right. Good morning, St. Louis, and welcome to the KMOX Home Improvement Show. I'm your host, Rich Orris, and I'm here to tackle all your home maintenance and remodeling dilemmas. No matter what you're facing, maybe just something simple like a leaky faucet or a leaky window with some driving rain. We've had a lot of that this week. Maybe you got a big remodeling dilemma. Maybe it's you're trying to redo an entire kitchen and need a little advice on how to get through some of that work. Well, hey, we're here and we've got your answers, everything you need right here today. We're going to take a deep dive into your burning questions. So pick up that phone and give me a call. Dial 314-436-7900 to join in the conversation. From plumbing to painting, leaks to lighting, no topics off limits. Let's roll up our sleeves and make your home the dream home you would love it to be. We've got the next 2 hours, so stay right here with me on KMOX. We've Cardinals don't take on the Giants till about 3. I think the pregame's around 2:10, something like that. So we've got a full show for everybody today. So you do not want to miss out. Again, 314-436-7900. Get you straight into me. And we've got already got Nancy on the line. Let's grab Nancy and see what's going on. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I have a question. We have an old metal shed that over the years we've painted with Rust-Oleum and we've kept it looking real nice. But we've noticed in the metal roof, it now has like small holes in it. And when it rains, the water comes in on our lawn equipment. So is there a product that we can roll or paint on the top of the roof to seal these holes?
So, I mean, yeah, you'd be looking for something. It would really depend on the size of the hole, but my worry about the whole thing is that, yes, it's the metal's, you know, thinning. It's starting to wear, rust, and it's just wearing out in small areas. So if they are small enough that something like that would work, it's probably going to keep wearing out around it and reoccurring. So over time, but I don't know of a product that actually kind of paints on or whatever and fills the actual hole. If it does, it probably wouldn't last really super well, but I'd be looking for something to kind of patch it with.
Okay.
Putting something over top of it to kind of seal a larger area. Another piece of metal that you kind of cut in a square and seal around it. You could even kind of do one on the inside and one on the outside if you wanted to try that and kind of smash it in there and seal around it that way. Or like a kind of a rubber sticky roofing type material that would stick to the metal. These are all going to be kind of temporary fixes.
Right.
That once water keeps getting there, and sometimes you can just kind of caulk that, you know, seal or caulk that piece of metal to the inside and then just caulk it really good with like a urethane type caulk and then paint it again, you know, caulk it from the top side, paint it again. And basically you're just waiting for that to wear out and continue to happen and it'll eventually continue happening until the metal's just so old, you're doing it so often that you'll end up just in the market for probably a new shed eventually. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of ideas you could go about to try and seal that up. And some of these, like if you put a piece of metal and kind of caulked it on the inside to give it some backing and caulked the top, smoothed it out real good, and then painted over all that, I mean, sometimes that could last a couple years.
Uh-huh.
You know, it could last 2 months. It could last 2-3 years.
Now, would we have to put a primer on that before we would paint it with the Rust-Oleum?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a good idea to get it to stick well. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little primer first over that area would be good, and then just paint the whole thing again, make it look nice, and you're just... This is the actual definition of putting a Band-Aid on something, right?
Yeah.
But
right,
we do it all the time.
If
you know what to expect, then that's perfectly fine. And if you're just not in the market right now for a completely new shed because of it's getting old and wearing and stuff, you go through that and you keep up with it and you keep it looking nice, and it could last for a long time yet for you.
Okay. Yeah, because the sides of the shed, you know, are still looking pretty good. It's just the roof, you know. Some of the sides have some rust spots on it. And that was my other question. Now, on these rust spots, do we have to sand them first, or can we just put, like, a primer on the rust spots and then paint it with the Rust-Oleum?
Yeah, I would definitely clean it up, sand it, try and get as much of that rust and clean it with a damp cleaner to kind of get it smoothed out. Then once you can kind of, if you can see the metal, you get rid of 80-90% of that rust, that'll help that adhere. Then you can do your primer, do your whole metal paint, and you'll be good to go.
Okay. And then, yeah, because I mean, over the years we've got the forest green, we paint the roof, and then we paint it a lighter green, so it looks real pretty. And I mean, it's old, but anyway, we just didn't want to get rid of it if we something we could fix those holes, you know, seal the holes up on the roof.
Yep. I would try that. I would try for make sure when you sand the rust on the sides, you clean it well, because you don't want that dust there when you prime.
Okay.
And then I would try a piece of metal kind of sealed on from the underside of the roof.
Okay.
And then do like a caulk, urethane type caulk, paintable caulk on the top. Clean it real well. Put that caulk on the top and then prime and paint over that whole thing, and I'm sure it'll buy you some good time.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks so much.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for the call, Nancy. I appreciate it. And we got a couple more here on the line, but I think what we'll do is we'll get into our first quick break here. It will not be long, but we've got, if Joan and Mike can hold on through this quick break, we'll have more questions and comments and answers right after this. All right, guys, we are back. KMOX Home Improvement Show. Rich Orr is here for you. You can give me a call. I'll be here for the next 2 hours, 314-436-7900. And holding through the break, I appreciate it, with Joan and Mike. Let's get to Joan and see what's going on. Joan, are you there?
I am.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have a roof and insulation question. So we've had a roof on our house. It's about a 1,300 square foot house, and we've had it for about 30 years. No leaks, but the granules are starting to come into, falling off the roof. So I am seeing on a lot of new roof repairs that they're putting this, like, ventilation on the peak area, which we don't have now. And we have a couple of ventilation areas up there now. One had a fan that isn't working right now. But just wondering, do we need to do that peak area? The other one has lasted so long.
So that is, you bring up a really great question and topic. On the fan, the vent fan that's not working, do you have any idea, like, how long that has not been working?
Oh, years and years.
Okay. And is on your roof where the siding goes up, do you have, like, what they call the gable on the sides where the siding goes up to a peak, and you've got vents on each side of the house towards the top of that sided wall at the peak?
No. I know what you're saying. No, we don't.
Okay. So I guess most of your ventilation, do you have, like, these little black or colored, what they call turtle vents, every now and then on the back of the house that
create? Yes, we have one of the turtle vents and a couple of the, just the piping, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep. So if you don't have the gable vents, then the new ridge vent that they put on might not harm the way your attic ventilation is working. From what I'm hearing from you, it sounds like you don't have enough exhaust ventilation for the roof, but the information gathered of this roof took 30 years to wear down and have the asphalt start really coming off and get to a point where it's worn down. If you had really, really bad ventilation, that would have probably happened in 15 to 20 years.
That's what I was thinking.
So
that we might not need it.
Yeah, yeah. Without looking at it and seeing the circumstances of how it's functioning, I would say from the way that it lasted 30 years, if you put the roof back together the way that you have it now, and you have the same ventilation kept, put back, and working the same way, you should be really, really good to do that and have that work. I don't think that the new ridge vent would harm your ventilation. I just think you might not necessarily need it because it's worked so well in the past, and it does cost more money. So if that's a part of the decision, then you go, well, it's worked this long for this much time, and the shingles are better today. A lot of them, if you get a good type, you get a good thick shingle. If you're doing the architectural type shingle, they're a little bit thicker. They're a little bit better than they were 30 years ago. So you should have really, really good luck just doing your roof and keeping the ventilation that you have.
Okay. Yeah, mostly I was thinking you're putting more holes in your roof and maybe squirrels or I don't know. I thought there was more there to go wrong.
Not really. We don't see a whole lot going wrong with the vents they put on top, that ridge vent that runs all the way across. The only time I see something go wrong with those, there's two times there's an issue where it goes wrong, and one is just because they didn't install it well. If they don't use long enough nails, it can blow off, and if they don't install it well or they cut too much of the plywood away and wind-driven rains kind of get into it, there's things like that that can happen from an installation process side that you got to just have a really good roofer that's not going to do something like that. And you'll be fine. And then the other way is that there's other ways that your roof might ventilate. And if you do the ridge vent, like the gable vents that I was describing to see if you had on each side of the house, when you put on a ridge vent and you have those gable vents, then you need to go in and close off those siding gable vents on the sides of the house, because your roof won't ventilate as well because it'll pull air from those other vents. So there's a slight theory there that if they put on a ridge vent and they don't close off other ways that your roof ventilated, it could kind of short circuit and end up not working as well.
Okay, that sounds great.
So all the reasons to make sure you got a really good educated roofer that is going to really do a good thing.
Okay. The other question was the insulation. We've had the insulation in there for so many years, but it was the, I don't know what they called it at that time, like treated, shredded newspaper that they blew in.
Uh-huh.
So I want to get rid of that because I think it's coming through, you know, our vents in the house because I think it's, you know, worn down so much. What can I put in there now? Do they still do where you roll the insulation in? What's the best thing to do now and how to get rid of the existing?
Okay, so the insulation company can get rid of the existing, and they basically just reverse their equipment that blows the insulation in, and they suck it out into a trash can, truck, dumpster, box truck, something like that. So they just basically vacuum it with the same equipment. Then they turn that equipment around and they blow in the new insulation. And there's some different ways that you can do that. The best way is they actually spray on like a spray foam insulation that creates a layer of spray foam over your entire ceiling on the attic side. It's only about an inch or so thick. It'll be an inch to 3 inches thick.
Okay.
And then they blow in a light kind of fiberglass type insulation on top of that, and that insulation's very thick, and that holds your temperature difference, and the spray foam holds some temperature difference, but it mainly air seals so that you're not losing warm air in the winter from the house up into the attic.
Okay.
And wearing out your insulation, all that. That's expensive. It's the best way, possible way to do it. The middle road is to just have them take all that insulation out, and they blow in kind of the same type of thing that you have. It's a cellulose insulation. It looks like that newspaper type of stuff. And they blow that in, and that helps block some air from infiltrating and moving, and it helps block it more, losing it from the house than the fiberglass does. And that's like a good middle road for the investment level and everything that goes with it. And then the least expensive way to do it is they blow it in with a fiberglass and or a bib system. It's real light. It's fluffy. They do it about two foot to 30 inches thick. And the issue with that is air can blow through it. So if your attic's ventilating and air's moving, you can lose heat in the winter through it. It'll hold temperature difference well, but air moves through it. So that's kind of, you can still lose some energy stuff through the house if you do just that fiberglass type. So I usually recommend the middle road unless you're really, really want the best thing and you're going to live there a really, really long time. It doesn't hurt to get both prices and see what you like and what you choose.
Those roll without blowing it in and just laying it in?
Yeah, you don't really use the fiberglass rolled out insulation anymore. One reason is the thickest you can get is about an R30 to 36 or something like that, or 38. And they're really recommending now in our area that you insulate up to an R49 on an attic. So you can't get the latest recommended insulation value for an attic in St. Louis. And things change, temperatures change, our environment changes. So this is why kind of those insulation values are changing to where now they're basically saying for St. Louis, all the houses should be built with 2x6 walls to get more insulation in the wall, and the attic insulation is good to be air sealed and get up to an R49.
Okay, great. And how long does the middle of the road, the cellulose insulation, how long would that last then? I
mean, that should last the rest of the life expectancy for your use of the house. That insulation, as long as you don't have storm water damage, and you can fix areas if you do. If water gets in through something, some shingles blow off, you can just kind of repair that area. But yeah, that insulation should last you 30 to 50 years.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much for all your help. You're great.
All right, no problem. You're welcome. Let's jump here to Mike and see what's going on, see if we can help Mike out. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Doing all right. First quick question on that, or answer on that shredded cellulose. Retired firefighter, and if you can get rid of that stuff, get rid of it.
Yeah, no, that is definitely for the paper, yeah. Because any fire retardant's worn out by now.
Well, friend had a fire with had involved aluminum wiring, and it looked like a mouse burrowed through that cellulose. You could see the burns on the trusses and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Looked like a mouse burrowing. So and it was hidden. You know, you'd have to chase that fire all over the house.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yep.
My question involves a bay window. Bay window is over an unheated, closed off space. It's a brick house, about 90 years old. And the bay window is about 10 feet wide. The depth is about 2 feet from the per square. And under that bay window is bare dirt, and it's brick around that. We noticed a small amount of mold when we removed some wallpaper on the painted area under the wallpapered area under that window sill. The only access to that area is about 2 or 3 bricks from the inside that I can see into there and look.
Okay.
Any any suggestions on, I mean, the house is 90 years old. It's not falling down. We just noticed the mold with a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, yeah. So definitely, if you've got that bay without a foundation underneath it, going down to the dirt and kind of sealed there around dirt, you definitely get a lot of ground moisture that will get up under that floor system. And yeah, it will get into the walls and it will cause mold. And I see that all the time with people smelling mold. They're like, when I'm in my basement over near that area, or when I'm in that area on the first floor, that usually you kind of start to smell it is usually the first sign, without actually finding it doing work like you're doing. And yeah, the best thing to do with that, and I'm really surprised, 90 years is a long time. I'm surprised they haven't, and this is something that could have been fixed two times over. It could have been fixed 60 years ago and 30 something years ago, and now you're finding it again. But it would definitely be good to try and get into that floor system and do something to try and separate the ground and the ground moisture and seal that off so that you quit getting the moisture from the ground inside that floor system. And these are difficult to do because a lot of time you're doing them from the top side because you don't really have much access. So you're taking off like the floor, the carpet, whatever's on top to get inside of there and trying to find a way to put some kind of rubber lining or something underneath that. And the thing to remember is you got to try and seal it. You got to try and make it so that there's no edges. If you just lay like a piece of plastic down there, you're going to have all four edges around it that the moisture is still just going to come up. So you're trying to bring it up, kind of tie it into the floor joist and seal it so that that ground moisture stays underneath it and doesn't get around the edges of it. It's a difficult thing to do when you're that close on the ground. The other place I see it all the time is when you have a bay like that and it's on your front porch and then they pour concrete around it and it traps all that ground, the moisture, and it doesn't give any airflow, and you just get a lot of ground moisture up underneath that floor, causes all that mold. So that's kind of your goal, is taking the floor up and seeing if you can separate that ground moisture, seal it up so it doesn't get in there anymore.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Mike. We're going to jump into our middle hour break here. We're running just a tad bit behind, so if Tricia can hang on the line there through this quick short break, we'll have more for you as soon as we return.
News Radio 1120, KMOX.
All right, we're back. Hey, Home Improvement Show. Rich Orr's here for everybody. We got plenty of time to get through all this. After this segment and the next segment, we got a whole nother hour. So remember, you can find me right here, 314-436-7900. Anything you need around, about, inside, outside, leaks, you name it, we do it. And speaking of, we've got Tricia on the line. Let's see what's going on there. Hey, Tricia, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Thanks for calling.
So my parents have a house built in 1975 and popcorn ceiling throughout. I don't know what the solutions for that are. I don't know if there's asbestos, what's the likelihood, and then I read about like encapsulation versus, you know, taking it down. Didn't know if you had any advice.
Yeah, so definitely the biggest piece of my advice would be to have it tested because it's not super expensive and it's very safe. Then you'll have your answer. So you need to get a little bit of that popcorn ceiling from somewhere, kind of mask up, glove up, make sure if you could even wear like a respirator, not just a mask, but like a filtered one, and get some of that ceiling, scrape some of it into a Ziploc baggie, seal it up. I use a company called Wellington Environmental, and you can take it to them, and I forget what the charge is, but they can take it, they send it out, it gets tested, and they'll let you know if it has asbestos, how much asbestos, is it safe, is it not, and then you can have your answer. So if it doesn't have asbestos, and it's not super likely to, but they when they stopped using asbestos and all that, they definitely kept some around, and they had overstock that people used off, and so they didn't just like draw a clear line of when they stopped it. So you just can't use that date to 100% know. But if you have it tested and it comes back without anything in it, then you can do a typical scraping to kind of scrape everything down, smooth it out with some joint compound, and then prime and paint to get a smooth ceiling. If it has asbestos in it, then you would either need to go to a company like Wellington Environmental to have that removed, and that way they'll do it safely and everything. But that is, it's fine to encapsulate it, and that's the route that I would take 95% of the time or more, is you basically re-drywall the ceiling right over top of that and put your light fixtures back, everything, tape mud, do all your stuff. You get a smooth ceiling, and you don't have to mitigate that asbestos popcorn ceiling with a company. So it kind of, the investment probably weighs itself out. It might be pretty close to the same once you add drywall and all that to it, but it's a perfectly easy and safe way to do it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, no problem. You are very welcome. And it's definitely, we have a lot of that we see in St. Louis with the popcorn ceilings. And I would say always get it tested. Even if you're in the 80s, it's well worth getting that tested and knowing if it's in there or not. I think that test is $100 to a couple hundred dollars, something like that, maybe $200 or so now. Of course, with inflation and everything happening, I haven't done one in quite a little while here lately. But, yeah, everything's going up. I was just talking to my wife about the water bill, and it had been so dry in July and August, and I have running my sprinklers. I had to run them a little more than normal to try and keep the grass healthy. And boy, I was talking about a really biggest water bill that I've really ever seen in the 10 years plus that I've been in this house. And we were kind of contemplating, well, I wonder how much of that is, obviously we used more water, but how much of that is, that's just where the bills are going and everything's increased so much. It would have probably been well more than a year or two ago if it was the same amount of water. And I'm like, yeah, probably, because that is basically just what's happening with everything that we buy, absolutely everything. So everything with our homes, everything with how we run them, how we energize them, everything we do is just getting more costly. So more and more thought should be put into the energy usage, solar panels. Should we have gas or not? We need to eventually in our lifespan here, and we need to get rid of natural gas and go all electric for the fossil fuel and the air we breathe and everything going on. So we need to start considering how we do that and some of that. But I'm here for everybody out there. We're going to get into our final break for this hour, but I'm here to help everybody out. You can find me again at 314-436-7900. Got plenty of show, plenty of time for your questions, your answers, your comments, and your concern. We'll take a short break.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Now, once again, here's Rich Orris.
All right, welcome back. the Home Improvement Show. Rich Orr is here, like he said, and got plenty of time and a whole nother hour coming up for all your questions, comments, concerns, anything you have going on. I'm right here for you. Give me a call, 314-436-7900. Love to help you out. And I was just kind of touching on some of the energy, some of the ways we think we're going to need to change here in the future, kind of what we do and how we use our homes and how we energize them and how efficient are they, how well are they insulated. Everything's different, changing, and there's a lot of things going on. And I just had about a week ago, I was having a conversation with a homeowners association, their HOA. It was the president and the vice president of the homeowners association, and they were talking about solar panels, how they do not allow solar panels. They didn't really like the look of solar panels. They were asking about, like, where do you position them and why, and because their thought was it just doesn't look good on the front of a home. But if your home faces south and you need these on the south so it's getting the most amount of sunlight that it can to really make it work, then that's just where it needs to be. And I was kind of explaining to them, because they were like, yeah, it's in our indentures that you can't have solar panels. And they had somebody move because of that and was like, nope, I want to be green. I want to do this. And so I was kind of explaining to them the reasons they should consider changing that, because the changing times and the things coming up, and as you drive around, you're starting to see these all over the place. You're seeing them on fire stations and government buildings, and we definitely, as a society, need to start to change what we're doing. We need these things to be more affordable for homeowners so that we can have more of it and have more people participate to make everything better all the way around. Because think about the amount of electricity that we need to produce as a society. And if you have a home that's able to get energy and actually at times feed power back to the power plant, and not necessarily do you not even maybe owe the power plant anything for that month, but they owe you, so you have a credit for the next time that you use their service. If you don't have a lot of sun and it's not working at times, then yep, it's gonna bring those bills way down. And I think people, the more time goes on, the more this is happening, people will see more value in that, and it's bringing up the value of our homes. It's just literally going to make each home worth more, so that if you're in a neighborhood and you're looking at three houses and two of them have solar panels and one doesn't, a lot of people will lean towards the solar panels and go, that's awesome, because it's going to help. We're going to have cheaper bills, all this stuff. So the return on investment might not be super great right away, and it could take a while, but then it could make your house worth that much more later on if you hand it down, if you sell it. So it could literally bring up the value of the entire neighborhood. And the HOA says you can't have it. And so I think a lot of these municipalities, HOAs, all the governing people that oversee this need to look into it and start talking about changing that and letting people do that in order to make it. Eventually, the federal government will have to take that over. Think about it, like they did with water, with toilets, with faucets, with shower heads. We need to conserve water. So now there's things from the government in the way we make everything, all the products that we have to abide by. So toilets started using less and less water. They had to redesign them. Faucets did. Same thing with light bulbs. I've had a lot of this conversation, and we can talk more about the light bulbs after the break in the next hour. But the way they said, okay, get rid of halogen, get rid of incandescent, make them all LED, make them last, make them use so much less power that we need less power to run society, to run our houses. So it makes a lot of sense, and it brings me back to a conversation I had years ago with my brother-in-law at my house. I had rebuilt my toilet tanks to have the flush where you can flush with less water if you hit the handle here, or it flushes with more water if you hit the handle there, and it's saving water on some of the flushes. And he looked at me and he asked me and he said, well, he's like, so if you do that, he's like, I mean, does that really make a difference? Are you really helping society, helping everyone, because you've got two or three toilets in your house that use a little bit less water than everybody else? And my answer was, no, yeah, you're exactly right. It doesn't help. It doesn't help at all if I'm the only one who does it. But imagine if you did it in two to three toilets in every house in America. It doesn't sound like a lot of water when it's only my house, but if you can convince everyone to do it, then, and that's why the government takes over and says, you know what, we're going to do this and we're going to make it mandatory because we have to protect the future, the environment, all of that. So there's good reasons to do that. So yeah, if one person does it, it's really how you get to everybody else, how you convince everybody else, and how you get a society to get on the same page and do all of this. So solar panels are great. All the different energy is great. We're going to get there whether we like it or not. So I would say start thinking about it, start figuring it out, change how you govern, change your HOAs, and let people do things that help and things that they want to do. So we're going to take our hour break here, but we'll be right back after the news and everything. We've got a whole nother hour for you.